This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Van.
Those of you living in the Rochester area
and
have been listening to WBER for the last 18 years probably are familiar with him. So I'm very excited to announce our guest today is MC Lars. You may remember Lars from, if nothing else, his popular viral song, Download This Song. But he's also been putting out albums basically for about 24 years now. And we're thrilled to have him on. Welcome, Lars.
Hey, thanks, Greg. That's a very nice introduction. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So I assume you're probably joining us from sunny California. We're getting a little sunnier out here in Rochester, but we are not known for our sunshine. So thank you for popping in with a little bit of sun from the West Coast.
It's all good. You know, I grew up in Cali. These days I live kind of outside of Philly.
Oh, okay.
So when the sun hits, it's exciting here too. So
yeah. All right. Well, Philly is a wicked cool city. So I'm thrilled that they've gotten even cooler now that you're in the vicinity. So I want to get into some of our questions. I was first introduced to your music, I think in 2006, which is when you entered WBER's regular rotation. And for those of our listeners who are not in the Rochester area, WBER is probably the coolest station that we've got going in our city right now. It's one that has introduced most of the people that I know who listen to any kind of alternative music to the bands that they know and love. What really struck me about your sound, though, that made me kind of take note was that the album, The Graduate, which came out in 2006, it's very much a hip hop album. But it clearly has punk rock and punk adjacent influences peppered throughout it. So do many of your other albums. You name drop Madball, I think, on This Gigantic Robot Kills. And you feature guest vocals from The Donnas and Choking Victim, Leftover Crack. And I think one of my favorites from The Graduate is Hot Topic is not punk rock. That's just like a straight up punk rock song. It's not even a hip hop song. So usually we just stick to hardcore here on this podcast. But we're going to adapt our intro question that we ask most of our guests a little bit for you. So, you know, we want to know your hardcore punk rock origin story. But which came first for you, finding punk rock or finding hip hop?
That's a great question. I mean, Beastie Boys were really my intro into both, right? Because I remember on Ill Communication, there's some like thrash songs that are really stood out for me. So, but you know, in the Bay Area, there's a lot of crossover because you have like Operation Ivy and Rancid and then like Too Short and E40, and it all has that DIY ethos. Like you're going to sell these tapes out of the trunk of your car, right? So punk, I would say, came first, but through kind of like the lens of Beastie Boys, even Beavis and Butthead, it was all kind of the same stuff. I remember the Beavis and Butthead experience is like, has Anthrax covering Beastie Boys, Run DMC, like a really cool compilation. I started doing the rap because I was in a ska band called Horus, and then I started playing bass in a hardcore band called Amphoteric, and I would open for my band doing the rap as kind of like a fun solo thing with like my keyboard, and people were feeling that, and that was kind of the jump off. And I moved from Oakland to like the Santa Cruz, Monterey area. My dad got a new job in like middle school. So it's kind of different from the Bay Area scene, more like ska and reggae, and but a lot of like interesting hip hop stuff. So that kind of caught on, and it's easier to rehearse and do on my own. Cause having a band like is hard, especially when your friends can't drive when you're like 15. Yeah. You feel me?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a couple things that are like really important to this podcast and to myself. The first being Beastie Boys. Like, I kind of don't think that the Beastie Boys would have been as revolutionary of a rap group if they hadn't had like the punk rock influence. Because I really feel like they're at their core like a hardcore punk band, and they kind of brought that attitude and persona into you know, what they did with hip hop. And I think it just worked so well. Beastie Boys, also, I apologize to everyone. I've said this like 50 times now, but Beastie Boys, or not Beastie Boys, but Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead was my introduction to hardcore. They parodied Sick of It All's song Step Down off their Scratch the Surface album. And I was like totally into it. I was like, I got to get this. I went out later that weekend and bought that album from a record store at a shopping mall. So you're on the right track here. You mentioned that you played bass in a hardcore band. What are some of like the hardcore bands or like hardcore punk bands that you are particularly fond of, either past or present?
Yeah, man. Like, you know, because the Bay Area has that sort of crossover with metal and thrash, it all kind of like melded together. Like I was really into, I mean, obviously you wouldn't call Metallica a hardcore band, but like they would cover hardcore songs. I remember the Slayer album, I think it's Undisputed Attitude. They do some hardcore covers. Like that was the first stuff I got into. But then I later, you know, I got into Adam and His Package a lot. I don't know. You know him?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Phenomenal. And he did a cover of Waiting Room on one of his records. That's like really tongue in cheek and funny. So in high school I got into Fugazi, and then I discovered Minor Threat, and I was like straight edge. So like that really spoke to me, and I still am. But there's a period where I wasn't, but like that really spoke to me. And of course, like, you know, discovering Black Flag on Napster and Dead Kennedys. I don't know if you'd call them hardcore, but they stand out.
Yeah, I lump them in there too, because they like had so much to do with like Black Flag and you know, some of those early California hardcore punk bands. So what I like, similar to the Beastie Boys, what I like about some of your albums is, you know, you crack a new one open and it's a lot of great hip hop songs, a lot of really fun pop culture references, a lot of literary references, which is probably the single best use of my English literature bachelor's degree.
Hey,
yeah, shout out. But there's like the Beastie Boys, there's always like some punk songs kind of peppered in there and sprinkled throughout. Can you tell us a little bit about how you approach the creative process when you're writing a song that has like punk influences or maybe punk samples, versus, or really any song that you do, that incorporates traditional rock instruments, as opposed to like a purely electronic, hip hop song?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I appreciate you asking that. Like I always write with a guitar. I have an acoustic guitar that I start with. Recording a full band, as you know, it's a lot more expensive than just like, this is my basement where I can just do vocals, you know, like it's gotta make sense that you brought a full band in aesthetically. And I always try to, my punk songs, I always want the title to be something, if you say it, you get it. You're like, oh, that's true. Like Hot Topic is not punk rock is a good example. Or the song I did with Roger from Less Than Jake, it's called Sublime with Rome, is not the same thing as Sublime. Like you say it and you're like, oh, because punk has that immediacy. Like my rap songs usually have shorter names. And so I'm like, okay, is this something that like you'd get right away? Because, and then, yeah, it has to fit with the aesthetic. And the third thing is like, can I get this guest? Like a good example of that working in, well, not working, was on my last record, Blockchain Planet. I was talking to Carl Beekner from Earth Crisis.
Yeah.
And we were going to do a song about how the FDA is kind of like cracking down and how like, you know, like a lot of SoundCloud rappers promote opiates and stuff and fentanyl and it's dangerous. So it was a song about that, but the demo was kind of more like poppy and ska. And he was like, maybe we could do something else. So I had the guest, I had the concept, but the direction wasn't collaborative enough. So that's always an interesting thing. Cause like in this culture of working remotely, especially during COVID, you got to get in the room with the band. That's how the Matches song came out. That's how the Less Than Jake song came out. Like, yeah. So it's all about circumstance and the concept. Maybe that's a long answer, but yeah.
No, and I love it. And it's very appropriate. I want to stick to, talking about, kind of the creative process. And I'm curious to hear a little bit about your most recent album, the collaboration with Schaefer the Dark Lord. How does that, is that process any different when you're doing like a whole album with someone versus just one song, or is it just more you know, kind of more of the same strategy that you take from one song, but you expand it out to like 12?
So to do a collaborative record, I found what works for me is you really need a specific concept. Like I did an album with this dude, Megaran, a few years ago, and it was all songs about books. So I was an English major. You'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
And this song with Schaefer is like this, excuse me, this album with Schaefer started out as a song. We did a song. It was kind of like a Bauhaus inspired goth punk song about the Haunted Mansion called No Windows, No Doors. And so we were like, wait, what if we do a whole album about the Haunted Mansion? And then we were like, that's maybe too specific. What if we just did songs, dark songs about Disney? So that started with us like taking, like working remotely, doing the demos, and then, yeah, just being on Zoom calls a lot because I was in Cali for most of that time. But yeah, to do like a project like that, it has to be super specific. I've never done a full project with another band, but that would be cool. That's definitely on my bucket list, you know?
Yeah, well, dark songs about Disney is a good way to tap into the lucrative market of Disney adults, which I'm now aware of. We're not close enough to Florida here, so I like don't get to full on experience that, but I know that's a phenomena to behold. Also want to circle back to Carl Buechner from Earth Crisis, like excellent name drop on that one. And it's interesting too, because I saw, I think it was Scott Krause from Earth Crisis just participated in a charity. They released a charity single with some members of Public Enemy for a cool nonprofit called Punks for Autism, which dope. Yeah, I'm trying to get them on the show. I'm going back and forth to find a date that works. But another cool connection between hardcore and hip hop.
And I see the poster behind you on your left.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, these are some of my collections. Yeah, over here.
Pretty dope, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I got Fugazi there. Most of these are like Rochester shows or Rochester bands, because that's kind of where my heart is. Home is where the heart is, I guess.
I think, I was going to say that what's cool about Earth Crisis is that like it was so aesthetically different. And if you can pair that with a unique perspective, that's dope. Like my whole thing's always been like kind of anti-corporate, but I do value education, right? Or like being anti-big pharma, but also pro-vaccines, like being able to balance that stuff. So anyway, I love how they,
That's awesome. Kind of exactly my perspective. Cause I'm always, I'm skeptical of authority. And that's very much what I get from punk rock, but I'm also like a rational person and I can, kind of make sense of the world for myself. So I fall, I think, somewhat into the same camp as you, where like, speaking of Earth Crisis, very influential on the region of the state that I live in. I've been vegan for, several decades now because I got into their music. Doesn't also stop me from, being someone who isn't, who's interested in things like science, similar to what you've, referenced, not anti-vax, but I'm also skeptical of the pharmaceutical industry and what, in our individual and collective relationships with some of these substances are.
Yeah.
So kind of getting back into hardcore and punk, it's very clearly there's a musical influence and kind of a political social commentary influence in your music. But I think having been listening to you for, a number of years, almost two decades now at this point, the most noticeable aspect of hardcore and punk that shows up in your music and in your stage persona is the DIY ethic. How has the tradition of kind of DIY as it's represented in punk rock influenced your approach? It's everything from recording music, making merch, booking a tour. How is that showing up for you as MC Lars in the hip hop community?
Yeah, I mean, from a macro level, hip hop on the mainstream side is obviously not very DIY, but it started very DIY. And you could say the same thing with like huge pop punk bands, right? But like they all had to start promoting it themselves. And like originally 30 years ago, maybe even 40 years ago, you had to do so much of the marketing yourself. Now it's just like being savvy with the tech and being like able to promote yourself. But I think like the DIY ethics are about helping people out and caring about what people are doing and like wanting to give a hand and just like staying for the entire show. You don't leave after you play. Like bands have opened me for me and left after I've played. If they've tried to open for me again, I take note of that. And like, I try not to be like a gatekeeper with like how to act, but like, that's something that always was important to me. You help people load out, you know, it's like, it's a community. And I think one of the first examples I saw of that was Adam from Adam and His Package. When I was in high school, I met him at a show I went to and we kept in touch and he sent me a list, this like secret document of all the local promoters that I could hit up in California that had done shows for him. And so it was like about sharing that information. And yeah, man. And also like being nimble about your platforms, because like it was MySpace when I started, then it was YouTube and now Spotify. People hate Spotify now. And like, there's good and bad with everything, but being like able to exist without it. And that's the result of being kind to your fans. And also like doing things like having a big email list and like not being beholden to one platform, because if TikTok makes you huge, cool. They can also take that away if you don't have real fans. So that's kind of how I see it. I mean, that's more of a business answer, but I think like DIY is like, do I do this because I'm trying to like make $1 million, or do I do this because I have there's no other option for me? I have to. It's in my soul and I need to get it out there. Like doing a dope podcast like this. Like you have to do it, you know?
Yeah, and I think what you've spoken to is something that I think we've all encountered over like the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years with social media. Especially those of us who are trying to do something creative on social media. It's a real catch-22. Like you need it to connect with people who might want to consume what it is that you're making. But at the same time, then you wind up adapting what you're doing so that it can like fit better within the algorithm of a specific platform. Like when Instagram really made the jump from, you know, static picture-based content to like the more video content, I like noticed that like kind of engagement with the podcast was starting to drop off because we didn't have as much videos. So we had to kind of adapt. But I like what you're saying about kind of diversifying, because for me, the social media aspect is always, it's a stand-in. It's representative of the actual community that you're participating in. And I think people lose that from time to time. It's, you know, you can't just engage with folks on social media. That's what you do to set up your IRL in-person interactions with others.
You're right, man. And it won't last if you don't have the IRL element. And I think I owe a lot of my like knowledge in the industry to this guy, Tom Gates, who was my first manager, and his big band that he helped get famous was Brand New on the Long Island tip. And they had some hardcore like influences a little bit, the post hardcore emo stuff, and I know Jesse like, you know, ran into some problems and turned out, anyway, it's a whole nother story, but Tom was always about like, you shake every hand, you wait to the end, you like, they were big, but he was like, you have to do all these little things, because like you could take the elevator to the top, but the elevator can break down, you got to take the stairs, you know what I'm saying? And I really respect him for that. And I worked with that dude for about 6 years, and I learned a lot.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's Brand New is a funny one. I don't think I have it behind me, but there was this band from Rochester that I just loved in the late 90s, early 2000s, called Stand Fast. And they played a show in Syracuse where Brand New opened for them. It was like on their way up at just like a community art space. But I like love that flyer because they're like one of the bigger bands that I've seen at the bottom of a flyer. I've got like some interesting flyers with Fall Out Boy, you know, on it, where they're being like promoted as like, you know, the guys from Race Trader have started a pop punk band, you know. So anyway, that's an aside. One other thing about DIY and hip hop, is DIY different in the hip hop community? Are there angles to how hip hop artists are, you know, kind of doing things for themselves that we can learn from in punk rock instead of the other way around?
You know, one thing I noticed at the big level, like I've done shows with Snoop and Nas and this dude, Young Jock, like bigger rap, T-Pain, the bigger rappers, they don't have merch. They just fly in and set up and put their money into the production and like the beats. and don't worry about like having the merch. It's totally at that level, it's different. You know, you don't monetize it at that level. But on the smaller level, it's a lot more like you don't need to hear the music necessarily to sell it, like with the mixtape culture or like selling stuff out of the trunk of your car. Like you don't have to, like, if you like the person and they're cool and they have style you respect, aesthetically, you maybe will be on board with what they're doing. And that's different because, like, as a solo brand, you can get your image across a lot more stylistically and in a modular way, especially in the Bay with like hyphy music and E40s, all that. Like, people would just play stuff out of the car and sell CDs in that era. And so I think with punk, you know, other than like the Warped Tour model of walking down the line with the CD player, like back in the day, they used to do that. You need to actually be in a space for the culture to happen. Hip hop is a little more decentralized. And I think the merch not being so integral to that is an interesting like representation of that phenomenon. But I think that's changing because like groups like Suicide Boys and Ghost Mane and like, you know, I do the Gathering of the Juggalos and like I do an ICP podcast. That scene is all about the merch. So that's like an interesting hybrid. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's funny. It's interesting because the Gathering of the Juggalos has actually come up a couple times on this podcast. And like, it's not entirely my scene, but what I respect about it is it seems like it's an actual authentic community in kind of the same way that hardcore and punk are an authentic community of imperfect people just coming together and trying to make the best of what they can, you know, what they have. So I kind of have like a weird respect, you know, for that community, because it seems like, you know, if I wasn't into this, like maybe there's like an alternate version of me somewhere out in the multiverse where I've got like white face paint on and you're on my Juggalo podcast right now.
They were very influential on me when I was in high school. 'Cause it was like the first live rap show I saw and the mosh pit and the Faygo. And like, I was like, oh, you can be real, really weird. And if you stick to what the weird thing is you're doing, people will get it. And that's why I always tried to craft MC Lars as like a bit of a character, like wearing the Zelda chain, like always wearing the Oakland A's hat. Like that is an interesting thing because like punk is not so much about image. Well, hardcore isn't about image, but that is also its image. So ICP like go the total opposite route. So,
All right. So kind of before we wrap things up, as you know, as probably most of our listeners know, because they live in Rochester, we're based out of Rochester, New York, which is a city I'm very proud of. And I'm proud of the creative output that our hardcore and punk scenes have put out. But you've got a number of connections to the area. As I mentioned earlier, you've been in regular rotation on WBER for almost 20 years. I think I've lost track of how many times you've made appearances at the Bug Jar. You've also collaborated with one of our local music legends, Worm Quartet. And I think I actually saw, I think maybe you invited Shoebox, the guy who does Worm Quartet, up on stage when you performed in a park in Rochester. Gym Class Heroes, I think, is another band you've shared a stage with, too. Was it just by chance that you became kind of so ingrained in kind of Rochester's music culture, or are we like a hot spot for up and coming artists kind of your caliber?
I mean, Joey, what's his name? Joey Gusto.
Yes.
Who's the station manager, or he was, I think. I don't know if he's still, but
he might not be, because I remember hearing him when I was like in middle school, you know, in like 1994. So he could be retired at this point.
He would always like rally for me. And Rochester was like, it's literally the only city in the US where like I have some sort of radio presence. And it's so cool that Monroe College or whatever, like the infrastructure of mid-sized American city can have a station like that. That's not controlled by like the big five record labels. So I think that's very punk. And I think it's very cool that it's all been about the radio. As for like the collabs, like Worm Quartet, I found on mp3.com back in the day. Gym Class Heroes, we both toured because there was a site called Absolute Punk that was like, we were the only rap that they were talking about. And I remember we did a tour October 2004, and it was very sparsely attended. But Katy Perry was at our show in Anaheim before I knew who she was. And like, they blew up. And so it's all just been kind of random. I think it's because Rochester is, I don't mean this to seem weird, but it's like a working class town that's like values music and it's people there are loyal fans, and it's also cold as heck most of the year. So like places with like wet, harsh weather, Seattle, Liverpool, Manchester, like they tend to have really good music scenes. So I still love going up there, eating the garbage plates. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's great. Bug Jar is a really, really cool venue. And this podcast is really cool, man. So yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So anyway, I'll wrap things up. MC Lars will be appearing at the Bug Jar on Tuesday, May 21st, with Schaefer the Dark Lord, Shubzilla and Bill Beats and MC Snacks. So be sure to get your tickets for that over at the Bug Jar's website. And I'll see you folks at the Bug Jar. I'll give MC Lars the last word here. If you have any shout outs or name drops you want to get in before we wrap up.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, our openers are awesome. MC Snacks is a Canadian rapper who does the ICP history podcast with me. And Shubzilla and Bill Beats are from Seattle. And Bill Beats is DJing for us too. And like, they're dope. So keep your eye open for them. It's a really great tour. And it'll be cool to see you, man. I can't wait for the show. Snacks is a Canadian rapper who does the ICP history podcast with me. And Shubzilla and Bill Beats are from Seattle, and Bill Beats is DJing for us too. And like, they're dope. So keep your eye open for them. It's a really great tour. And it'll be cool to see you, man. I can't wait for the show.
The Hardcore Archive podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Hardcore Archive Podcast and Enterprise Hardcore Podcast on Instagram for updates.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com.